morning, or for this evening, if you would, please. Looking at a few quick announcements. Ladies, notice, Tuesday afternoon, 5:30, you are meeting at Village, or not Village Inn, Bob Evans. I've said Village Inn for so long last year, now it's Bob Evans. They have requested a change of pace, a new menu, new service, so they're going to Bob Evans. So, Tuesday, 5:30, the Bob Evans at the corner of Johnson Drive in Antioch, just in front of Hen House and Home Depot, just off Johnson Drive down I-35. Ladies, we got the men's breakfast on Monday mornings. The morning it's the hardest for me to get out of bed. Thursday then is Hi-Fi, 7th through 12th graders. Looking forward to meeting with you once again, 7 to 8:30. The bulletin says spaghetti night. I'm lying. Spaghetti night was this past Thursday night. I just forgot to take it out of the bulletin. They went through four packages of spaghetti, four jars of spaghetti sauce, and 36 rolls. And then they came back looking for more. Still can't believe they ate that much. But we had a fun time. I shared this with Jim. I haven't shared it with anyone else yet. But one of the games we played on Thursday night, I had made a target out of paper with a bullseye in the middle with 50, 40, 30, and 10 points. And they were throwing spaghetti on this target on the wall trying to get points. And the spaghetti would stick to the wall. You know the old tale that says if you throw spaghetti and it sticks to the ceiling, it's ready, you know? We kind of threw it at the wall. And I told Jim I washed off the wall so he doesn't have to worry about washing the walls off. But the teens had fun with that one. I enjoyed it too. But what? Well, we didn't get on the ceiling, unfortunately. Didn't have to worry about that. Who? Who said that? Who said that? There were some rugrats we had there on Thursday that didn't want to listen, but that's another story. But we had a fun time. We're looking forward to on October 28th, I believe it is, we're having a bonfire. So there'll be information coming out for that, teens and parents of teens. We're going to go a little longer that night. If someone has a problem with transportation, we can arrange that. But we're going to start 6:45 and end at 9 that night. We're going to go out to the Wyandotte County Lake and have a bonfire out at the Boy Scout site. We did this a lot last year and had a lot of fun. We're looking forward to doing it again this year. Next Sunday, October 24th, is Pastor Appreciation Potluck after the morning service. Gloria and Pat are in charge. They asked that you would bring food to share, bring enough for your family and extra to share. Don't just bring side dishes and don't just bring dessert, but make sure you bring a variety of food for your family, also enough to share. There will also be a basket there. If you'd like to put a card in there for Pastor and his wife, you can put that card in the basket there at the potluck. Special thank you to all that participated last week in the 60th anniversary. We had a great time. We came in this morning and our attendance was down a little bit this morning. I said we must have partied too hard last week. Some people hadn't quite recovered yet. But we had a real good time last week, a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it, so thank you for making that possible. And then also, one last thing, the Trunk or Treat is coming up October 31st, 14 days away. Seems like just yesterday we were talking about it being a year away. And it's already just 14 days away. The hot dogs are here. The hot chocolate is here. The buns have been purchased. They're going to be here. The tracks are here. The scooters are here. The moon bounce has been rented. We have everything we need except for pop and candy. So we are still in need of 30 cases of pop, 12 packs in a pop. I believe if you watch your sale ads, we're not asking for Pepsi or for Coke. We're just asking for off-brand stuff. Price Chopper oftentimes will run 5 12 packs for $10, so you can watch for those. And we are in need of candy. We do have some financial giving that has been given that we have a bit available to use at the last minute, but I wanted to give you folks the opportunity to give out of the abundance that God has given you. I wanted to personally say thank you. I realize in the last few months I've asked a lot out of the church family and the wide variety of different things, be it salads or pop and candy or hot dog buns. We just a few months ago for vacation Bible school were asking for cookies and for Kool-Aid and for a wide variety of things there. I just want to say from the bottom of my heart, thank you for your willingness to give. There are a lot of churches, I think, that are struggling in that area where people don't necessarily want to be involved, and the cost falls upon the church. And that's kind of what I'm trying to get around, is so that the necessarily isn't coming out of the church budget, but the folks of the church are willing to say, okay, God blessed me with this amount of money, I'm going to use it for His glory. And I just want to say personally, thank you. I've asked a lot from you as a church family, and you have yet to neglect the call. I just want to say thank you. And it seems like every week I'm asking for something different, and I apologize about that, but at the same time, thank you so much for your giving. I don't think I'm asking for anything else for the rest of the year, but you never know, something might come up. But and I know that if something comes up, you will come through, and I really appreciate that. This evening, I'd like to speak to you upon the topic of Esther, and I've titled my message this evening, For Such a Time as This. We were in the book of Nehemiah briefly this morning as we were learning about the walls of Jerusalem being rebuilt, and we saw that the books of the Bible go Ezra, Nehemiah, Esther, Job. We're in Ezra or Esther this evening, and we're going to look at the story of Esther, a woman that we don't oftentimes look at or verify in our study of God's Word. And I'd like to do that this evening, looking at a woman named Esther and her background, who she was, what she did, and because of what she did, what we can do as well, how God enables us to do certain things. When I was in college, at Bible College, I was able to be a part of a school play. It's really only the school play that I was really ever in where I actually had a leading role. And I got to play the part of Mordecai in the story of Esther. And I got to not bow down to the evil, wicked man named Haman that we're going to read about today. And had a fun time doing that. In fact, in January, we have a missionary couple coming, Jim and Sarah Engel. They are missionaries to Germany. And Sarah was Esther in the play. So we always talk about this play and what we remember from it and so forth. So the book of Esther, the story of Esther, is kind of close to my heart because I got to play a special part in the play of it. But also, when you are in part of a play like that, it opens your eyes up to certain things that sometimes you don't see necessarily when you're just reading through, or maybe if you watch a movie of a Bible story, you might think, well, maybe this happened as well, you know, and kind of give a different limelight on the topic. But this evening I want to talk about who Esther was. Esther in chapter 2, we kind of are introduced to her, where she becomes queen of the land of the Medes and Persians. If you remember this morning, Daniel is in charge of, as we had the prophecy of Daniel in the 70 weeks, we saw that he is living during the time of the Medes and Persians. He was before with King Nebuchadnezzar in Babylon, and then he was with Darius with the Medes and Persians. And today we are tonight we are with Esther, under another king of the Medes and Persians named Ahasuerus. We talked a little bit about Ahasuerus this morning, talking about Artaxerxes. Artaxerxes was the one that told Nehemiah that he could go back and rebuild the walls of Jerusalem. Ahasuerus was the father of Artaxerxes. So we have one of the mothers of Ahasuerus of Artaxerxes was Esther. Remember, they had harems and concubines and many wives. So Esther's going to be the queen, but there'll also be a whole house full of concubines, and that's where Artaxerxes comes from. It's kind of Esther's kind of his stepmom. But we have here in chapter 2 of the book of Esther kind of the background of Esther. And we're going to read quite a few chapters this evening to give you the whole overview of Esther's life, and then kind of take it and understand, okay, if Esther can do that, what can we do? How can we live? So we're going to start in Esther chapter 2. Esther, by the way, is the only book in the Bible that does not mention God by name. It's an interesting chapter. Obviously, you will see God having an important role in the book of Esther, but you will not see him mentioned. But we begin in Esther chapter 2, verse 1. After these things, by the way, let me tell you what happens before these things. We start with verse 1. It says, after these things, let me tell you just what happened. In chapter 1, there's a woman named Queen Vashti. Queen Vashti was a woman that was her own woman. She was independent. The king was having a big party, a big feast. Most likely it turned into a big sexual orgy sort of atmosphere. They were drinking, they were eating, there were great curtains and great decorations for this huge festivity. And they call for Queen Vashti to come. The king commands her to come and to dance before everyone in attendance. Now, when they had parties, they only had men in attendance. So they kind of have the idea why they're calling Queen Vashti. And when Queen Vashti hears what they want, she does not come. She does not obey the command from the king. And because of that, then, she is taken and removed from her position, and she is killed. Because if the queen doesn't obey her husband, how are all the rest of us supposed to get our wives to obey us? Was the kind of the idea. So, she is removed from her position, and she is killed. So now we have a vacant position. We need a new queen for the land of the Medes and Persians. So in chapter 2, then, this is where we're picking up. This has all taken place. So chapter 2, verse 1 says, after these things, when the wrath of King Ahasuerus was subsided, he remembered Vashti, what she had done and what had been decreed against her. Then the king's servants who attended him said, let beautiful young virgins be brought before the king, and let the king appoint officers in all the provinces of all his kingdom, that they may gather all the beautiful young virgins to Shushan, the citadel, into the women's quarters, under the custody of Haggai, the king's eunuch, custodian of the women, and let beauty preparations be given them. By the way, if you were a eunuch, if you were in charge of the concubines and the wives and the women to potentially be the wives of the king, you were something special compared to everybody else. To keep the purity of the women so that the servant, the eunuch, did not have advantage of the women, especially since they were very beautiful, he was castrated. He couldn't do anything with these women. So he was kind of the protector of the women, if we'll put it that way. So all these women are being brought together. The king's eunuch, this man that's been castrated, is going to watch over them and be the custodian of them. Verse 4. Then let the young woman who pleases the king be queen instead of Vashti. This thing pleased the king, and he did so. In Shushan, the citadel, there was a certain Jew whose name was Mordecai, the son of Jair, the son of Shemel, the son of Kish, a Benjamite. Kish had been carried away from Jerusalem with the captives, who had been captured with Jeconiah as king of Judah, whom Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, had carried away. Daniel chapter 1, we learned that King Jehoiakim, same person, just a different name for the king, King Jehoiakim had been defeated by Nebuchadnezzar, the Babylonian king, and they had been started to take Jews from Judah to Babylon in three separate different settings, the first one being in 605 B.C. when Daniel was first brought over. So Kish, Mordecai's father, was one of these individuals that was brought from Judah to Babylon, and here he is now in Babylon because of the same reason Daniel was in Babylon. So let's keep going. Verse 7, and Mordecai had brought up Hadassah, that is Esther, his uncle's daughter, for she had neither father nor mother. The young woman was lovely and beautiful. When her father and mother died, Mordecai took her as his own daughter. So it was, when the king's command and decree were heard, and when many young women were gathered at Shushan, the citadel of the palace, under the custody of Haggai, that Esther also was taken to the king's palace, into the care of Haggai, the custodian of the women. Now the young woman pleased him. She pleased Haggai. She made him happy. She obtained his favor. So he readily gave beauty preparations to her, besides her allowance. Then seven choice maidservants were provided for her from the king's palace, and he moved her and her maidservants to the best place in the house of the women. She kind of caught his eye. She was special in his sight. Now the young woman, verse 9, pleased him, and she obtained his favor. Verse 10. Esther had not revealed her people or family. She hadn't told them she was a Jew, for Mordecai had charged her not to reveal it. And every day Mordecai paced in front of the court of the women's quarters to learn of Esther's welfare and what had happened to her. Each young woman's turn came to go into the king Ahasuerus after she had completed 12 months' preparation. You know, sometimes I get upset with my wife. We're going to go out for dinner or something, and she's in the restroom putting on her makeup. Imagine waiting 12 months, you know. There's the idea. So she's waiting. She's had to complete this 12 months' preparation, and here's what it is. According to the regulations for the women, for thus were the days of their preparation apportioned. 6 months they were adorned with oil of myrrh, and 6 months with perfumes and preparations for beautifying women. Thus prepared, each young woman went to the king, and she was given whatever she desired to take with her from the women's quarters to the king's palace. In the evening she went, and in the morning she returned to the second house of the women, to the custody of Shashgaz. She was no longer a young virgin, so she was moving to the second house, moving to the place where she was going to live after that, the king's eunuch who kept the concubines. So if they weren't chosen to be queen, they were still going to be in the king's house. He was going to use them to have children to further his own ancestry. So I'll start at the beginning of 14. In the evening she went, and in the morning she returned to the second house of the women, to the custody of Shashgaz, the king's eunuch who kept the concubines. She would not go into the king again unless the king delighted in her and called for her by name. Now when the turn came for Esther, the daughter of Abihail, the uncle of Mordecai, who had taken her as his daughter to go into the king, she requested nothing but what Haggai, the king's eunuch, the custodian of the women, advised. And Esther obtained favor in the sight of all who saw her. So Esther was taken to King Ahasuerus into his royal palace in the 10th month, which is the month of Tebeth, in the 7th year of his reign. The king loved Esther more than all the other women, and she obtained grace and favor in his sight more than all the other virgins. So he set the royal crown upon her head and made her queen instead of Vashti. Then the king made a great feast, the feast of Esther, for all his officials and servants, and he proclaimed a holiday in the province and gave gifts according to the generosity of the king. When virgins were gathered together a second time, Mordecai sat within the king's gate. Now Esther had not revealed her family and her people, just as Mordecai had charged her, for Esther obeyed the command of Mordecai as when she was brought up by him. In those days when Mordecai sat within the king's gate, two of the king's eunuchs, Bigthan and Teresh, doorkeepers, became furious and sought to lay hands on King Ahasuerus. So the matter became known to Mordecai, who told Queen Esther, and Esther informed the king in Mordecai's name. And when an inquiry was made into the matter, it was confirmed, and both were hanged on the gallows, and it was written in the book of the Chronicles in the presence of the king. Remember that for later, that comes into play, and it's very important. So the question is, and from chapter 2, who was Esther? Esther, first of all, was a Jew. She was one of the captives of Israel. We see that back in chapter 2, verses 5 through 7, reading about Mordecai and how his uncle, or his father Kish, came and was brought as a captive to Israel. So she was a, if you could put it this way, a second, I don't want to say it that way either. She was a lower society, if you will. She was not of the Medes and Persians. She was one of the captives, one of the Jews in Israel. They lived under the Medes and Persian law. They had laws of their own, according to the Old Testament, the first five books of the law, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. But she was different. She did not obey, she was under the laws of the Medes and Persians, but she was still different. Kind of like as if you were to be from a different a country and you came carrying a green card, or you were an immigrant working here in America. You obeyed the laws of your country, but you still paid taxes to the country you came from. You still wanted to go back. You still had that tie to the country where you were from. Very similar with Esther. She is a Jew. She's different than the rest of those in the palace. Number two, she's a young, beautiful woman. Women were not individuals of power during this time. They were thought of more as property. They were possessions. They did not have any authority. They did not have any say. That's why when Queen Vashti did what she did, that was such a horrible thing for her to do. And we see that she's a young, beautiful woman, which is partly a problem for her. She's chosen to be queen. She's put in a position of power, sort of. Not really with any authority, though. So she's a beautiful young woman. Number three, what else was she? She was one who had favor. She had favor from the eunuch there in verses 8 and 9. She had favor in verses 15 from all that saw her as she went to prepare to go into the king. She had favor from the king there in verse 17. He loved her more than all the other women. She obtained grace and favor in his sight more than all the other women. She was an individual that was cared for. She was loved and was given favor. And number four, she was one that was loved by the king. That one sets her apart from all the other ones. Verse 17 tells us that he loved Esther more than all the other women, and she obtained grace and favor in his sight more than all the other virgins, so he set the royal crown upon her head and made her queen instead of Vashti. Nobody else was queen of the Medes and Persians except for now Esther. There was no one else that could fulfill that position except for her. So she is given a special position. She's a woman, she's a Jew, she had found favor from other individuals, she was loved by the king. She was different than anybody else in her position. Well, what did she do? What makes her so special? Pastor, why are you focusing on her tonight? Well, we're going to read the next few chapters, and we'll help us understand that. I thought I could just kind of stand here and give you a storyline, but I'd rather you saw from God's Word how God used a young woman for His glory. We're going to look at chapter 3, verse 1. After these things, King Ahasuerus promoted Haman, the son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, and advanced him and set his seat above all the princes who were with him. And all the king's servants who were within the king's gate bowed and paid homage to Haman, for so the king had commanded concerning him. But Mordecai would not bow or pay homage. Then the king's servants who were within the king's gate said to Mordecai, Why do you transgress the king's command? Now it happened when they spoke to him daily, and he would not listen to them, that they told to Haman to see whether Mordecai's words would stand. For Mordecai had told them that he was a Jew. When Haman saw that Mordecai did not bow or pay him homage, Haman was filled with wrath. He was filled with anger. But he disdained to lay hands on Mordecai alone, for they had told him of the people of Mordecai. He was a what? What was he? He was a Jew. So So he's scared of the Jews, if you can put it that way. He was scared of his people. Let me see. Haman sought to destroy all the Jews who were throughout the whole kingdom of Ahasuerus, the people of Mordecai. In the first month, which is the month of Nisan, in the 12th year of King Ahasuerus, they cast Pur, that is, the lot, before Haman, to determine the day and the month until it fell in the 12th month, which is the month of Adar. Then Haman said to King Ahasuerus, "There are certain people scattered and dispersed among the people in all the provinces of your kingdom. Their laws are different from all other people's, and they do not keep the king's laws. Therefore it is not fitting for the king to let them remain here. If it pleases the king, let a decree be written that they be destroyed, and I will pay 10,000 talents of silver into the hands of those who do the work to bring it into the king's treasuries." So the king took his signet ring from his hand and gave it to Haman, the son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, the enemy of the Jews. And the king said to Haman, "The money and the people are given to you to do with them as seems good to you." Then the king's scribes were called on the 13th day of the first month, and the decree was written according to all that Haman commanded. To the king's satraps, to the governors who were over each province, to the officials of all people, to every province according to its script, and to every people in their language. In the name of King Ahasuerus it was signed and sealed with the king's signet ring. And the letters were sent by couriers and messengers in all the king's provinces to destroy, to kill, and to annihilate all the Jews, both young and old. I lost my place. Both young and old, little children and women, in one day on the 13th day of the 12th month, which is the month of Adar, and to plunder their possessions. A copy of the document was to be issued as law in every province, being published for all people, that they should be ready for that day. The couriers went out, hastened by the king's command, and the decree was proclaimed in Shushan, the citadel. So the king and Haman sat down to drink, but the city of Shushan was perplexed. When Mordecai learned all that had happened, he tore his clothes and put on sackcloth and ashes and went out into the midst of the city. He cried out with a loud and bitter cry. He went as far as the front of the king's gate, for no one might enter the king's gate clothed with sackcloth. And in every province where the king's command and decree arrived, there was great mourning among the Jews, with fasting, weeping, and wailing, and many lay in sackcloth and ashes. So Esther's maids and eunuchs came and told her, and the queen was deeply distressed. Then she sent garments to clothe Mordecai and take his sackcloth away from him, but he would not accept them. Then Esther called Hatak, one of the king's eunuchs, whom he had appointed to attend her, and she gave him a command concerning Mordecai to learn what and why this was. She wanted to know what was wrong with Mordecai. Verse 7 of chapter 4, so Mordecai told him all that had happened to him and the sum of money that Haman had promised to pay into the king's treasuries to destroy the Jews. He also gave him a copy of the written decree for their destruction, which was given at Shushan, that he might show it to Esther and explain it to her, and that he might command her to go into the king to make supplication to him and plead before him for her people. So Hatak returned and told Esther the words of Mordecai. Then Esther spoke to Hatak and gave him a command for Mordecai. All the king's servants and the people of the king's provinces know that any man or woman who goes into the inner courts of the king who has not been called by the king, he has but one law: put all to death except the one to whom the king holds out his golden scepter, that he may live. Yet I myself have not been called to go into the king these 30 days. So they told Mordecai Esther's words. And Mordecai told them to answer Esther, "Do not think in your heart that you will escape in the king's palace any more than all the other Jews. For if you remain completely silent at this time, relief and deliverance will arise from the Jews from another place, but you and your father's house will perish. Yet who knows whether you have come to the kingdom for such a time as this?" Then Esther told them to reply to Mordecai, "Go, gather all the Jews who are present in Shushan and fast for me. Neither eat nor drink for 3 days, night or day. My maids and I will fast likewise. And so I will go to the king, which is against the law, and if I perish, I perish." So Mordecai went his way and did according to all that Esther commanded him. Now it happened on the third day that Esther put on her royal robes and stood in the inner court of the king's palace, across from the king's house, while the king sat on his royal throne in the royal house, facing the entrance of the house. So it was, when the king saw Queen Esther standing in the court, that she found favor in his sight, and the king held out to Esther the golden scepter that was in his hand. Then Esther went near and touched the top of the scepter. And the king said to her, "What do you wish, Queen Esther? What is your request? It shall be given to you, up to half the kingdom." Wow, that's a generous offer. So Esther answered, "If it pleases the king, let the king and Haman come today to the banquet that I have prepared for them, for him." Then the king said, "Bring Haman quickly, that he may do as Esther has said." So the king and Haman went to the banquet that Esther had prepared. At the banquet of wine, the king said to Esther, "What is your petition? It shall be granted you. What is your request? Up to half the kingdom, it shall be done." Then Esther answered and said, "My petition and request is this. If I have found favor in the sight of the king, and if it pleases the king to grant my petition and fulfill my request, then let the king and Haman come to the banquet which I will prepare for them, and tomorrow I will do as the king has said." So Haman went out that day joyful and with a glad heart. But when Haman saw Mordecai in the king's gate, and that he did not stand or tremble before him, he was filled with indignation against Mordecai. Nevertheless, Haman restrained himself and went home, and he sent him and called for his friends and his wife Zeresh. Then Haman told them of his great riches, the multitude of his children, everything in which the king had promoted him, and how he had advanced him above the officials and servants of the king. Moreover, Haman said, "Besides, Queen Esther invited no one but me to come in with the king to the banquet that she prepared, and tomorrow I am again invited by her along with the king. Yet all this avails me nothing, so long as I see Mordecai the Jew sitting at the king's gate." Then his wife Zeresh and all his friends said to him, "Let a gallows be made, 50 cubits high, and in the morning suggest to the king that Mordecai be hanged on it. Then go merrily with the king to the banquet." And the thing pleased Haman, so he had the gallows made. Quick question, 50 cubits high, 18 inches a cubit, how tall was the gallows? 75 feet high. That's pretty high up there, wouldn't you say? That's for everyone to see what happened to Mordecai. Verse chapter 6. That night the king could not sleep. So one was commanded to bring the book of the records of the Chronicles, and they were read before the king. And it was found written that Mordecai had told of Bigthana and Teresh, the two of the king's eunuchs, the doorkeepers who had sought to lay hands on King Ahasuerus. Remember chapter 2? Then the king said, "What honor or indignation has been bestowed on Mordecai for this?" And the king's servants who attended him said, "Nothing has been done for him." So the king said, "Who is in the court?" Now Haman had just entered the outer court of the king's palace to suggest that the king hang Mordecai on the gallows that he had prepared for him. The king's servants said to him, "Haman is there standing in the court." And the king said, "Let him come in." So Haman came in, and the king asked him, "What shall be done for the man whom the king delights to honor?" Now Haman thought in his heart, "Whom would the king delight to honor more than me?" And Haman answered the king, "For the man whom the king delights to honor, let a royal robe be brought which the king has worn, and a horse on which the king has ridden, which has the royal crest placed on its head. Then let this robe and this horse be delivered to the hand of one of the king's most noble princes, that he may array the man whom the king delights to honor. Then parade him on horseback through the city square, and proclaim before him, 'Thus shall it be done to the man whom the king delights to honor.'" Then the king said to Haman, "Hurry, take the robe and the horse as you suggested, and do so for Mordecai the Jew, who sits within the king's gate. Leave nothing undone of all that you have spoken." So Haman took the robe and the horse, arrayed Mordecai, and led him on horseback to the city square, and proclaimed him before him, "Thus shall it be done to the man whom the king delights to honor." Afterward, Mordecai went back to the king's gate, but Haman hurried to his house mourning and with his head covered. When Haman told his wife Zeresh and all his friends everything that had happened to him, his wise men and his wife Zeresh said to him, "If Mordecai, before whom you have begun to fall, is of Jewish descent, you will not prevail against him, but will surely fall before him." While they were still talking with him, the king's eunuchs came and hastened to bring Haman to the banquet which Esther had prepared. So the eunuchs are there to take him back to the palace. What do you think they see in his backyard? A 75-foot-tall gallows coming into play. Chapter 7. So the king and Haman went to dine with Queen Esther. And on the second day, at the banquet of wine, the king again said to Esther, "What is your petition, Queen Esther? It shall be granted you. And what is your request? Up to half the kingdom. It shall be done." Then Queen Esther answered and said, if I have found favor in the sight of the king, and if it pleases the king, let my life be given me at my petition, and my people at my request. For we have been sold, my people and I, to be destroyed, to be killed, and to be annihilated. Had we been sold as male and female slaves, I would have held my tongue, although the enemy could never compensate for the king's loss. So King Ahasuerus answered and said to Queen Esther, who is he, and where is he, who would dare presume in his heart to do such a thing? And Esther said, the adversary and enemy is this wicked Haman. So Haman was terrified before the king and queen. Then the king arose in his anger and his wrath from the banquet of wine, and went into the palace garden. But Haman stood before Queen Esther, pleading for his wife, for he saw that evil was determined against him by the king. When the king returned from the palace garden to the place of the banquet of wine, Haman had fallen across the couch where Esther was. Then the king said, will he also assault the queen while I am in the house? And the word left the king's mouth. As the words left the king's mouth, they covered Haman's face. Now Harbona, one of the eunuchs, said to the king, look, the gallows, 50 cubits high, which Haman made for Mordecai, who spoke good on the king's behalf, is standing at the house of Haman. Then the king said, hang him on it. So they hanged Haman on the gallows that he had prepared for Mordecai. Then the king's wrath subsided. What did she do? She used her position. She used what God had given her, her ability to save her people. She used her position as the queen to be able to come before the king. Had she come as Vashti had done, she would have been removed from her position. But because the king loved her and cared about her, he granted her the golden scepter and she was able to come forward. She used her provisions. What other position can you imagine that Esther would have been in where she would have been able to throw a banquet for a king? None other than her own position as queen. She was able to use the things of the palace to hold this banquet before the king. She used her knowledge, her info of what had happened, of how Haman had made this plan to destroy the Jews, of how Haman had made this plan to utterly bring down Mordecai, if you will. She used her life. Look at chapter 5, verses 1 and 2. It says, now it happened on the third day that Esther put on her royal robes and stood in the inner court of the king's palace, across from the king's house, while the king sat on his royal throne in the royal house, facing the entrance of the house. So it was when the king saw Queen Esther standing in the court that she found favor in his sight. If she had not found favor in his sight, and he had not extended the golden scepter, what would have happened to her? She would have been killed. She risked her life for her people. She came forward and was willing to give her life to speak before the king. Not only that, but it also tells us in chapter 4 that she gave her time. Looking at chapter 4, verses 14 through 16, it tells us that Mordecai is speaking to her through the messenger of Hatak, and he tells her, do you really think that you'll be safe even in the palace? You are a Jew and you will die when that time comes. He says, you and your father's house will perish. But who will ever know if you were in the kingdom, if you were in the position you were for such a time as this? If God has you in that position for exactly this purpose, maybe that's why you're a queen. Maybe that's why you are where you are. And Esther tells Mordecai to gather all the Jews together to pray, to fast for 3 days, night and day, and that she would go before the king on that third day. She was willing to use her position, her provisions, her knowledge, her life, and her time. Question then comes, what about us? What can we do? Realize you are here for such a time as this. You have a purpose. You have a reason why you are alive right now. Sometimes in speaking to different people, I like to tell them that I kind of wish that I was alive back in the 1950s and 60s. It would have been fun to be a pastor of a church when many people were living spiritual lives and they were interested in religious things. And many churches during that time were full. I would think it would be kind of fun to go to the different sock hops and wear a leisure suit on a day besides Halloween. Maybe have the opportunity to go into the old ice cream parlors and soda shops where the floor was checkered black and white, you know, and you walk up to the soda jerk and, you know, order a drink and go into the ice cream parlor where they scooped out real ice cream into, you know, it wasn't the soft serve stuff, it was real ice cream in the cones, and you know, drive the old cars and go to the old drive-in theaters. You can still do that today, but it's not like it was in yesteryears. And it would be fun to live in that time. But I have learned I'm not living in that time. I'm living in the year 2010. And God has us here each for a specific purpose, a specific reason. I used to like to talk to people online. I know I'm kind of talking over some of your head, but there's things online called chat rooms. And you can go and talk to people on the other side of the world in these chat rooms. And I used to, back when I was in college, before I went off to Bible college, I liked to get in these different chat rooms and talk to people and witness to people online. These people, I had no idea who they were. You'd be amazed how easy that is when you can't see the other person's face and you're not worried about what they're going to say. But, it would be interesting to tell different people, especially those people that would come into the different chat rooms just to annoy other people, to antagonize. And you could say, you know, I think God has you here for a reason. It was true. You know, we are where we are for a reason. We have a purpose. Maybe we don't understand what that purpose is necessarily all the time. But God has us where we are for a purpose. Nobody else but you stands in your shoes. Nobody else but you has the contacts that you have. Nobody else but you can go where you go. Nobody else but you can handle situations like you handle situations. Nobody else can handle the different diseases or financial situations and whatnot that you are going through. Only you can do that. Nobody else has the resources like you do. Queen Esther was able to throw a huge banquet in honor of the king and Haman. You know, I don't have that kind of money. I can't throw a banquet of wine. You know, I don't have the fancy drapes and stuff to throw anything like that. I can have people over to my house, but it's not going to be a banquet for a king. If I call up President Obama and say, I want you to come to my house for dinner, do you think he's really going to come? You know, probably not. You know, and that's the, you know, she used what she had. Nobody else can influence people like you can. Queen Esther had a sense of authority about her, even though she really didn't have any authority to make laws or anything like that, but people respected her. She was given favor by God in the sight of other individuals. She had a position that nobody else could fulfill. Nobody else has a life like you have. Queen Esther had a life that she went from poverty, living in the city with her uncle, to being the queen of the Medes and Persians. She had a life that was changing. I may never be president, I may never be king, but God can still use me just as he wants to use you. And nobody else can reach those that you can. We oftentimes have the old saying, you know, we should try to walk, a 1,000 miles in someone else's shoes, you know, to kind of experience what they're going through. But you cannot truly do that. Only you have the ability to touch people the way that you have. Want to live for the Lord and lead people to Christ? Esther saved her people. We're called to reach out to help save others. Realize you're the only one in your shoes that can do that and live for him. She was willing to go before the king to risk everything so that she might save her people. God has called you. He's already promised you an eternal home in heaven. What are you willing to risk for him? We sang in that song just before we had our message this evening, the song we sang, Let Your Heart Be Broken. We're not going to sing it, but I just wanted to read to you that last stanza real quick again. Let your heart be tender and your vision clear. See mankind as God sees. Serve him far and near. Let your heart be broken by a brother's pain. Share your rich resources. Give and give again. Verse 4 says, add to your believing deeds that prove it true. Knowing Christ as Savior, make him master too. Follow in his footsteps. Go where he has trod. In the world's great trouble, risk yourself for God. I'm not worried about being shot for preaching about Christ. I'm not worried about someone coming and murdering me. It is happening in some churches where people are walking in with guns. That's another story. But as we are faithful in serving him where we are for such a time as this, he wants to use us. I truly believe that we do not die until God says, okay, I'm done with you. And at that point, then we're ready to go home. Until then, we should be glorifying him and serving him. Let's pray. Father, we thank you for the life of Esther this evening. And although we never see your name mentioned in this chapter, in this book, Lord, we understand that you are in complete control. If you had not loved Esther and cared about Esther and your people, the Jews, King Ahasuerus never would have extended his scepter. If you had never given Haman the idea to destroy the Jews and Mordecai, you never would have had him build the gallows, Lord. And it's so amazing to see how you had this all planned and how ironic it is that Haman eventually ends up being hung on his own gallows. How Mordecai is glorified because of his willingness to serve the king. Lord, you placed Esther in her position for such a time as that. The question is, why are we here today? What is it that you want to do with us? And I truly believe one of those many things that you want to do with us is for us to share the gospel, to share with those that are unsaved, our neighbors, our co-workers, our friends, our family members, those that have not heard the gospel, who have not accepted Christ as their personal Savior. The purpose that you have us here today for is to tell those individuals. May we be faithful in doing it. May we risk our provisions. May we risk our lives. May we risk our times. May we risk our positions that you have placed us in, because only we ourselves can walk in the shoes that you have given us to walk. In Jesus' name.